ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, Lisa Leong. It's your friendly manager, just making sure you're okay today. Your biometric data shows that your stress levels are higher than average, and your keystrokes are down, and trips to the toilet are double your daily average. I'm afraid you've slipped off the top five worker leaderboard for today. Better luck tomorrow.
Whoa. You might be surprised who's watching you and how you are being watched at work. From examining your keystrokes to turning on your laptop camera remotely, digital devices and AI are supercharging the amount of data captured and analysed in all different kinds of workplaces. Employers, of course, say that such surveillance is necessary to ensure compliance, productivity, and for health and safety reasons. But what are the downsides of the uptick in workplace surveillance? Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. The report of the Victorian Inquiry into Workplace Surveillance has just been released, so we thought it would be timely to take a look at performance monitoring at work. What's clear from the report is that the legal and regulatory framework hasn't quite caught up with the latest surveillance methods, so you're probably being watched, whether you're aware of it or not. How is surveillance being used where you work? When is it useful? And when does it go too far? You can email us at thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Penny Williams is an associate professor and the director of the Centre for Decent Work and Industry at QUT. Dale Tweedy is a senior lecturer in the Department of Accounting and Corporate Governance at Macquarie University, where he researches how performance monitoring affects workers and workplaces. They both made submissions to the recent Victorian Inquiry into Workplace Surveillance. And also with us is Aaron McEwen, Vice President of Research and Advisory in HR at Gartner. Welcome all.
Hi, Lisa.
Good morning.
Dale, performance monitoring isn't new, even though it does feel supercharged right now. And you say we can track things back to our old friend, Frederick Winslow Taylor. For those who don't know about his theory and influence, please explain.
Yeah, so Taylor was very influential in very granular analysis of what workers were doing. So typically, managers standing beside workers with a stopwatch, looking at exactly how they move their bodies, how long they take, and then formalizing that to create best practice standards for any particular jobs. Now, what's interesting about that is it wasn't just about efficiency, but it was very consciously about capturing knowledge that workers had about how to do those tasks and making that visible to managers in a way that it really hasn't been before. And I think that trend or that philosophy is very evident in more contemporary forms of surveillance, even though the tools that are being used have changed.
So how has employee performance monitoring evolved over the past 100 years?
Well, after Taylorism, there was a shift towards a more social way of thinking about performance measurement, so thinking more about things like motivation, people's roles in their teams, and so on. But towards the end of the late 20th century, we also saw the rollout of electronic surveillance devices, and one of the most studied was in call centres, where workers were tracked now using software in terms of how they do their jobs, how long they spend on calls, and so on. And I think what's really interesting when we look at this history is this problem of measuring work accurately and fairly hasn't really been solved. This issue that surveillance is not accurate, it can be biased in many ways, has been around for hundreds of years. And it's funny now when we look at the issues around artificial intelligence, this claim that artificial intelligence used in surveillance is biased and misleading. And in a way, that's very consistent with human surveillance over many years, that we haven't solved the problem of creating surveillance that is accurate and reliable.
Penny, what are some of the reasons why employers use workplace monitoring?
So I actually did a survey on this through the Australian Human Resources Institute. So we looked at why employers are using AI and different forms of automation when managing workers. And what we found in that survey was that the most common technologies that they were using were to monitor employees were laptops, smartphones, and other mobile computer devices that included some form of monitoring and tracking software. And then also biometrics such as fingerprint or eye scanning and video surveillance to monitor employees, as well as GPS. And when they were asked why these systems were implemented, they were most commonly implemented to track job and productivity of workers and to enable efficiency improvements in the workplace. But the other reasons they were adopting them were really positive reasons, like the safety of employees or improving the safety of customers and improving the security of the organisation, particularly in relation to data security and, you know, the risks of cybersecurity hacks.
You mentioned that sometimes with your laptops that you could be observed through the camera. Is it possible to be looked at and listened to in a kind of stealth mode?
Unfortunately, it is. So some of the research I've done has actually looked at the functions of some of these technologies, and many of them have the ability to operate in stealth mode, which means that the employee doesn't know. So the different ways that they can monitor an employee, if it's through a laptop, for example, would be, as you mentioned earlier, keyboard tracking, keystroke tracking. So it determines how frequently you're typing or how often you move your mouse. Some technologies can take screen grabs of what you've got open on your computer and can monitor what files or apps you're accessing on your computer, what you're uploading, and can potentially also take control of your computer or your camera. In fact, I've seen some that take shots of the person sitting at their computer to determine that it is actually that employee that is sitting at their desk. So, and that's, you know, just on the keyboard-based ones. There's a whole range of other tracking and surveillance devices that occur on your phone, or if you're driving a vehicle for work, or if you're using fingerprint or eye scanning to clock in and clock out at work.
Penny, you did mention biometric data. Is there something around this that you could share with us that might surprise or shock us in terms of the surveillance and biometric data?
Actually, I was quite surprised myself when I found out how prevalent this is. So I've been talking to organisations, to technology vendors and to workers, and it's quite fascinating how many workers in different industries are using fingerprint scanning or facial recognition in order to gain access to their workplace. Now, in a lot of cases, there's really good reasons for this. So for security purposes, in, you know, high-risk areas, in order to get into your workplace or in order to clock in, instead of the old punch card that used to exist, now you have to scan your fingerprint for it to recognise you. In terms of biometric, though, I think some of the more interesting technologies that are emerging do a bit of tracking of workers outside of the work hours. So, for example, there are some organisations that, as part of their wellbeing programs, are encouraging workers to monitor their sleep habits or to monitor their exercise habits. Now, there's really positive reasons for why you might do that, but what that does is it also provides your employer with a lot of information about your health and your non-work activities. And the question then arises about the extent to which the employers are entitled to that and what do they do with that? So this is where this is a really interesting space now, because long gone are the days where we could see the CCTV up in the corner and we knew we were being monitored. Now it's on our phones and it's, you know, it's when we turn up to work every day.
Well, Penny, then, how aware are employees that they're being monitored?
Because we know that some of these technologies can operate in stealth mode, some employees have no idea at all. And I think this is part of the problem, that there is no real opportunity for a worker to understand the extent to which their data is being captured and how it might be used. I think what matters in terms of whether an employee knows or not seems to be the culture of the organisation. So I've certainly been hearing from a lot of organisations who are really transparent about this, and they say, you know, our workers are okay with it because they know why we're collecting this data, they know the importance of it, they know what we're doing with that data, and so they're not concerned about it. And we're not concerned because we trust our employees to perform, but we're doing this for, say, for example, data security reasons or to improve their health and safety. Where it's more problematic is in the workplaces that are perhaps not telling their employees that they're doing this, but then the employee finds out when all of a sudden this data is used in a performance discussion.
Aaron, you've researched worker surveillance for Gartner. What positives have you found?
There's not too many, to be honest. So some of that biometric data that's being used to track things like employee sleep, you know, how many hours of work an employee is engaged in, some of that data, and it gets to that point around culture, when it's used to make adjustments and actually improve the employee experience, that tends to lead to fairly good outcomes. But the majority of surveillance is that kind of basic surveillance. You know, are you sitting at your desk? Are you actually attending the office? And what we tend to find is that monitored employees do a couple of things. One is that they focus on the work that is being monitored. And typically that type of work might be kind of linked to efficiencies, but it tends not to be what we would call value-adding work. And when you go back to like what's behind all of this surveillance, it's generally about productivity. Definitely there are issues around safety and compliance and those types of things, but organizations at the moment are just obsessed with productivity, and rightly so, because it is declining. And there's two parts of, or two components of productivity. One is the efficiency gains where, you know, if employees are doing the work at the right speed, getting the right volume outputs. But the other side of the coin is around value adding. And that's often much harder to quantify, and therefore it's more difficult to measure. And so what monitored employees tend to do is focus on the stuff that's quantifiable. And then they might actually withdraw from the value-adding tasks, things like discretionary effort where you might go above and beyond. So I think that's really problematic in surveillance, is that often it's counterproductive. It drives the wrong types of behavior. And in more severe cases, monitored employees are more likely to engage in things like theft or misconduct.
How does it get to theft, Aaron?
Well, I mean, I think this is about, you know, when you treat adults like children, they will often behave that way. So in essence, it's an erosion of trust. And when that trust is broken, employees, for whatever reason, feel more inclined to engage in activities that might be negative or destructive rather than positive.
And I hear that they might be doing workarounds as well. So gaming the system, if you
totally.
Like.
There's lots of TikTok videos of people like connecting their mouse to a fan and putting on an oscillation setting. If those employees weren't being monitored, or if they were being told clearly the purpose of the monitoring and the limitations, they probably wouldn't be engaging in the negative behaviours.
Lisa Leong with you for This Working Life on ABC Radio National, and we're looking at performance monitoring. How is surveillance being used where you work? When is it useful and when does it go too far? You can email us at thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. You're listening to Penny Williams, Director of the Centre for Decent Work and Industry at QUT. Dale Tweedy is Senior Lecturer at the Department of Accounting and Corporate Governance at Macquarie University. And Aaron McEwen is Vice President of Research and Advisory in HR at Gartner. Dale, can you talk more about what monitoring does to trust between a worker and the organisation?
Sure. So, I mean, essentially when you're putting in a monitoring system, you're replacing trust with control. And this has a range of issues for both ethics and how people actually perform their work in the workplace. So certainly what's come out very strongly when I've, you know, interviewed people about their experience of work and their relationship to performance systems is that people want to work well. I think sometimes this issue is framed as if, you know, people want to shirk or not work or take long lunches or whatever it is, and that we need monitoring to prevent that happening. And not only does that not prevent that happening, it also can get in the way of people doing what they want to do, which is to exercise their skills, to contribute to their organisation and also to contribute to their community.
Penny, I think in the Victorian Inquiry, it was quite clear that employers don't really mind that they are picking up more data than they possibly exactly need.
Yeah, no, I don't think they mind at all, in particular when it comes to location tracking. So a lot of the apps that workers will have on their phone, care workers, but any worker that might have to travel to different places generally has an app on their phone that will also track their location. Now, the upside of that is if they're in an accident or something, they can be easily found. The downside of that is that very often those workers can't turn that off in their private time. So employers actually have data about what they're doing, where they are in non-work time. It's just simpler to capture all of that data than it is to create functions where it can be turned on and off at the control of the worker.
And Penny, what happens as worker surveillance becomes more and more automated and decisions are being made by software programs rather than by human managers?
We end up interacting with a system more often than we do with our human supervisor. So that kind of humanness about work that we all like to experience, and that encourages us to give that discretionary effort to be a good organisational citizen, starts to get eroded because, you know, we're dealing with a system and not a person who understands, well, I was a bit slower today because, you know, I didn't get much sleep last night because my children were up till 3 a.m. or something bad has happened in my life and I'm just dealing with this right now. So we remove that kind of understanding of the employee as a whole person and we bring it back down to the employee as someone who's got to give us a certain amount of effort within a certain amount of time.
So Aaron, a recent article in Fast Company reports that half of Americans say that they regularly pretend to work. They call it ghost working, which is performing but not doing. So how does this feed into our discussion about monitoring and surveillance?
When people are monitored, they often engage in that type of behaviour. But I do think it goes beyond the issue of monitoring. I think sometimes this pretending to work is a reaction to always being required to be on. You know, the lines between work and life are almost completely blurred today. And particularly the points around, you know, our lives are being monitored sometimes unintentionally as a byproduct of employee monitoring. Employees are kind of, you know, taking the opportunity to get downtime when they can. But it also ties into a broader problem for employers, and that is that employee engagement has really flatlined over the last couple of decades. In many cases, it seems to be going backwards. Interestingly, somewhat in line with productivity levels. It's quite reflective of a relatively disengaged workforce if you're pretending to work.
Now, Dale, in some cases, though, employees may actually just be doing the wrong thing. So isn't monitoring a good way to identify this?
Well, I think certainly in these discussions, nobody's saying that we shouldn't have monitoring at work. And there's, you know, a range of kinds of monitoring that research suggests that people, workers are positive about. And they're particularly ones that are to do with, you know, the quality of the tasks that people are doing and also the safety concerns that Penny suggested at the start. I do think, though, some of these surveys feed into a kind of wider narrative that is misleading if we look at the broader data around work and what the issues are. So there is this narrative around surveillance that often comes up that, you know, there's this widespread problem with shirking and there's various forms of, you know, various terms, you know, ghost working being one of the more recent ones. But actually, if we look at a lot of the problems that we're facing in the workplace, they're not problems of underwork. They're much closer to problems of overwork. The second point I think is really significant is that there is this background perception in some of these studies and discussions that we should be using every minute of our working day to produce something. And historically, that's a really unusual idea. So if you look what happened at the start of the Industrial Revolution, you know, pre-Industrial Revolution, people's work habits were much more irregular. The working day was much more irregular. People stopped and started. The working life was much more irregular. People would stop for festivals for long periods and resume. And a lot of what surveillance did when people first came into factories was really aggressively break these irregular habits and try and force people to work in a regular way. But it's not a natural way to work. And I think we're seeing a lot of the health consequences for individuals, but also, you know, in things like bullying and harassment in the workplace and these kind of things, also a range of organizational consequences when we push people to work really intensively for long periods in a way that's not sustainable.
And Dale, you write that workplace monitoring can actually be done well when workers have input. Can you give us an example of that?
There's a case study I was looking at where they moved from a kind of top-down management system to a, you know, basically an open workplace conversation. This was in an accounting firm where initially they had applied, these are your performance metrics, issue your performance plan, a very common practice. And instead they said, well, let's come together. Let's talk about what the problems we're facing in our production processes. You know, where are the holdups? Where are the issues? How do we resolve those? And, you know, the outcome of that change was there was not only a decline in kind of stress and anxiety and conflict, but also an increase in kind of productivity. And it's quite a natural way of working together. I think the problem is that a lot of kind of top-down systems prevent people from having these kind of open conversations that can actually be really productive.
Well, listening to all the different ways we can be surveilled definitely has made me sweat. So, Penny, I want to ask you, from an individual's perspective, what can individual workers do about this monitoring right now? Can they do anything?
Other than buying a mouse jiggler? look, to be honest, there isn't actually a great deal that an individual worker can do other than to be aware and assume that they are being monitored. And honestly, if they're doing their job and they're not doing anything wrong, there's probably nothing too much to worry about.
Dale, can you help us out? What do you think individual workers might be able to do, if anything?
Well, look, I think it varies a lot between industries. So if you're a professional worker, then you have more scope to kind of move between employers that use more or less intensive surveillance, and that kind of voting with your feet is certainly one important process. But part of the difficulty is that the concentration of the more intensive surveillance work is happening in work like platform work, for example, Uber, these kind of things, where there's really very little capacity to resist those. So, you know, if you're an Uber driver, you can't negotiate with Uber about what kind of surveillance you'll be subject to. So I think they're the areas in which, you know, regulation is most significant, because there's less opportunity to demand improvements in conditions.
And Aaron, can we stop this freight train, or do you think it's just going to keep on going?
Well, I think it will keep on going, but there's no indication that the talent shortage is easing. An interesting angle that obviously is yet to be tested, and I'm certainly not a lawyer, but the right to disconnect legislation may be an angle that employees can utilize. We do have the right to disconnect in Australia, and that should, I think, include disconnecting from being monitored.
Thank you so much, Aaron.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Penny.
Thanks, Lisa.
And thank you, Dale.
Most welcome.
Aaron McEwen is Vice President of Research and Advisory in HR at Gartner. Penny Williams is the Director of the Centre for Decent Work in Industry and a Senior Research Fellow in the School of Management at QUT. And Dale Tweedy is a Senior Lecturer in the Department of Accounting and Corporate Governance at Macquarie University. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and tap the heart to follow all of our stories. This episode was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Kerry Dell. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Melbourne. Until next time, Love your work. I'm going to put like a thing block over my camera.
Yeah.
I think a bit of sticky tape goes a long way today.
Yeah, sticky tape. Yeah, burn a phone. Incognito. I'm going to start wearing dark glasses around the place.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.